listening to the Dakota Free Press podcast. Thank you for tuning in. I'm Spencer Dobson.
And I'm Corey Heidelberger. In today's podcast, Texas versus California on women's health, uranium mining and toxic waste in the Black Hills, Republicans, the inclusive party, Donald Trump's 100 days, oh my gosh, and our feature interview with Aberdeen School Board candidate Brian Sharp.
So how are you doing this week, Corey? What's going on?
Hey, I'm doing as well as you can under the Trump administration. How about you, Spencer?
I'm good. It's a little, it's a kerfuffle emotionally. I've gone from blizzard to 70 in a two-day span, and my body isn't quite sure how to act. I don't know how to dress. I don't know if I want to go outside. I don't know if I should be at the beach or drinking cocoa. It's just difficult, man. It's really difficult. Obama, why did you? No, I don't.
That weather is what makes us stronger people here in South Dakota. Surprise, the unexpected, and the need to keep our boots around just in case.
Yeah, fair enough. It didn't hit here. I came home from Sioux Falls, and it was It was snow the size of frosted flakes.
Yeah, another early blast of snow. Just crazy. And yeah, strangely, Aberdeen, the great northern tundra, didn't get that extra dose of snow. But yeah, it's beautiful out.
74 degrees.
Wonderful day. Wonderful.
Gorgeous.
Week.
Gorgeous. Couple of things. First of all, if you're a regular listener to our podcast and you would like our podcast to keep going, please throw a couple of bucks into the tip jar, which you will find on the Dakota Free Press podcast on the sidebar. There's also a link to it in the comment section.
And hey, you don't have to pay a guy to shovel your walk anymore. So send your extra snow budget money to support a great podcast.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. And we have a good guest today.
Yeah, we are going to talk to Brian Sharp, school board member. He's been on the board for 12 years, he said. Before planting, Brian had time to talk with us in his shop about why he wants to be on the school board for another 3 years.
Meat goats. The guy's got meat goats.
And meat goats. We got to see his goats. We didn't get goat sandwich, but I tell you, you know, with the school lunch regulations, with Donald Trump tinkering with that, maybe they'll let more goat meat into our schools. We'll see what happens.
I have no problem with eating goat, but I don't know. The goats were really cute, so I don't know if I want to go hang out with the adorable goats and then eat them. Let's get into our quick topics. So sometimes the government makes change, and then you can directly see the way that change impacts people. Because you collect data, and then that data, sometimes it's life or death, now, what that data tells you.
Getting that data requires doing science, which some people in the government are averse to. But yes, we can get science and pair it up with policy decisions and see how that affects real people and real lives.
This one, just, I almost fell off my chair. I was so shocked by this information. But in Texas, maternity mortality rates...
Right, the rates at which, like, women get pregnant and then have complications that they die from.
That they die from. Is higher in Texas than it is in some third world countries.
That's correct.
And the rate in California is one of the lowest in the world.
Right. And
right?
This is a strange trend for a developed nation like the United States to have. Nationwide, over the last couple of decades, the United States has seen maternal mortality, again, women dying because of pregnancy or childbirth, has actually gone up since the Reagan years.
But not necessarily, but they've kept better track of it since the Reagan years. It was in 2003, I believe, that they changed there's a box on the death certificate, and they started collecting that information, basically,
saying, did you die in
childbirth, basically, correct?
Correct. But even there, what we've seen is, even since we've started getting this good data, since 2003, the United States has this alarming trend where, yeah, we're seeing more moms die. And that's awful. We don't want that to happen. While in other countries, other developed countries, places where people have running water and stuff, that number's been going down. And that doesn't make sense. Health outcomes are getting better for women around the world.
Right.
But in general, not in the U.S., and definitely not in Texas, which has seen a spike since 2010 in those deaths.
Right. And what changed?
Well, what changed is also in 2010, you see a spike in the number of state legislatures controlled by anti-abortion Republicans. And Texas in particular has been a leader in policies going after abortion, making it harder for women to access, really not just abortion, but the spillover effect of making it harder for women to access women's health services, pregnancy health services. And in Texas, then what you see is more women dying
right.
because of pregnancy and childbirth.
Right. So if you are truly pro-life, perhaps you need to look at the impact your actions are having on people because you're creating more death.
Where California has some of the least, the fewest restrictions on abortion.
Right.
Many more counties have access to women's health clinics, you know, that provide abortions, but also provide, just like Planned Parenthood, provide a whole panoply of other services. And in California, contrary to the national trend, since 2003, maternal mortality has gone down.
Now, it does not seem like it should be a real head scratcher to me that if women have better access to health care, that they're going to be healthier. That just seems like kind of an obvious thing that should be guiding the legislative process. It's amazing that we have to have this conversation, but here we are.
Yeah, and we do because, and I agree, and I think even Republicans, even conservatives will say, sure, health care is good for women. Mm-hmm. But what happens is when you adopt abortion as this kind of absolute no compromise
right.
incarnation of evil that we must eradicate, that spills over into crazy ideas
right.
like defunding Planned Parenthood,
right.
and then moms die.
Yeah, yeah. They become zealots who are not worried about the repercussions of their actions, apparently. At least that's the way it looks.
Yes.
Because if you look at what the repercussions of their actions are, you can't possibly say you're interested in the well-being of women.
Exactly.
All right, next topic. This one's a little technical. It's a little technical. So we're going to drill big holes in the ground to put crap in that we don't want.
Well, double
what could be wrong with that?
Double your fun, Spencer. We're not only going to drill holes in the ground to put bad stuff in, we're going to drill holes in the ground to take bad stuff out.
Right.
In a way, out in the Black Hills, there's a company called Azarga.
Mm-hmm.
She used to be called PowerTech.
And they're a Chinese company, I believe, correct?
They're international. They're owned by some Chinese guys. There's some Canadian guys involved. It's hard to say. It's
a new world order.
It's new world order. It's Illuminati. They want our uranium because there is uranium.
Sure. Everybody wants our uranium. Who wouldn't?
Well, I don't personally. I
right.
don't have room in my house for it. But
right.
out in the Black Hills, southern Black Hills around Edgemont, there's been uranium mining in the past.
Sure.
That they say has polluted the water supply all up the Cheyenne River through the reservation and on. Go watch
okay.
Thunderheart with Val Kilmer. Great movie. That was back in the old days.
I remember that, yeah.
It's a good movie.
That was young, thin Val Kilmer.
Yes,
not
yes,
puffy
yes.
Val Kilmer.
Fine, I'm looking forward to the sequel. Azarga wants to go to the Black Hills and mine for uranium. And they have this technique. It's called in-situ recovery or in-situ leach mining.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, they squirt a whole bunch of water down into the rock.
Mm-hmm.
And that water kind of dissolves the uranium out of the rock,
okay.
and then they can bring it back up to the surface.
Now, they're claiming that they need to get rid of the water
right.
when they're done with it, and then they're saying the water that they put back into the ground afterwards has less, it's cleaner than when they got it. It's got get less uranium in it than when they shot it down in the first place.
Right. Azarga says that what they've applied to do is they shoot the water into the ground,
mm-hmm.
get the uranium to come up with the water. They pull the uranium out of the water, and then all that water that they used, they shoot it back into the ground in these injection wells.
Right. Now, here, there are a couple of things with the injection wells. Generally, when one wants to mine, one applies for permits for two wells, right?
Well, and that's...
Two, maybe three?
That's what I've seen. There's a group called the Council for Responsible Mining.
Mm-hmm.
They don't like this plan.
Right.
But they've looked at other ISR... uranium mine projects
right.
and find that, you know, comparable projects have one or maybe two disposal wells where
right.
they put their used water.
But Azarga wants...
They want four, maybe eight.
Maybe eight.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes... There was some head-scratching going on with why you would need so many wells. And the theory is because they're going to import other people's waste from other states, possibly other countries, shoot it into our ground. Now, what's wrong with that? Well, opponents argue that the contaminated water will bleed into the Madison Aquifer, where a large portion of our state gets their drinking water.
Yeah, that's where folks out in the Black Hills get their drinking water. It's a big ecosystem. It supplies Rapid City, etc. And in the past, I believe opponents of what PowerTech Azarga has had in mind, they've gotten the Rapid City Council
mm-hmm.
to kind of express its concerns about having their water supply poisoned. Now, the company consultants, and I've actually visited the site of the mine, visited Mark Hollenbeck, the guy who owns the land where this is going to happen, and he's a consultant for PowerTech. He pointed out something really interesting to me. We're not talking about pouring this wastewater into like a big tank of water.
Right.
An aquifer isn't a lake underground. An aquifer is water that's kind of suffused within sandstone.
Right.
It's wet rock, basically. What Hollenbeck told me, and again, he's with the company, but he said, you put water in that aquifer, it basically moves 7 feet a year.
Right.
Because it's seeping slowly through the tiny, tiny gaps in the water. The concern of the environmentalists is that, yeah, it's not all solid rock. There are cracks, there are gaps, there are other mines and boreholes that have been shot through this ground. The water will seek the path of least resistance and leak into the water supply faster than they say.
Well, yeah, it's right next to the Madison Aquifer, at least according to the picture. I don't know, you know, if that picture's accurate, it's the they want to put it right on top of the Madison Aquifer, right. Basically, and rock is porous.
And this is a picture in a video produced by the Council for Responsible Mining, right. The group that's opposing Azarga. And they're bringing this up because, Black Hills listeners, pay attention, there are public hearings on Azarga's permits next week in Rapid City, mm-hmm. Hot Springs, and in Edgemont, I believe May 8th, May 9th, and May 11th. I want to check my dates, but we'll post a link to that online so you can see when and where that is. And if you want to participate, you can go say your piece.
There you go. Next topic. You know who's welcome under the GOP Big Tent?
Wait, the GOP Big Tent?
The gigantic umbrella of the GOP. You are welcome if you're a millennial, if you're a Muslim, if you're transgender, gay, yeah, they love everybody. You knew that, right?
Are you trying to get us labeled fake news, Spencer?
I am just taking information that I got from your blog, from Dan Lederman, and apply it to the real world. Because that's, if you take that, what he said, and look at their actions, clearly those two things line up perfectly.
This is Dan Lederman, Dakota Dunes resident, Iowa bail bondsman, but also chairman of the South Dakota Republican Party.
Now, what did Dan say exactly?
Dan was making a comment at something that he organized and called the Republican Freedom Rally in Sioux Falls last weekend. He was talking to reporters and basically saying that, you know, millennials are concerned about community. Millennials are concerned about inclusiveness. And Dan Lederman said, that's what the Republican Party stands for, community and inclusiveness.
You know what inclusive people always chant? Build a wall. I just, it's every group of inclusive people I've met, I know it's a level of brazen BS that's hard to get your head around.
That is something that truly alarms me about the Republican Party, not just our South Dakota Republicans. I mean, I've encountered Dan Lederman in the news before, and I know he's full of baloney. But the willingness to be so, like, brazen is a great word for it.
Right.
So brazenly full of baloney. It is blatant newspeak.
Right.
To be a party that says, let's build a wall to keep people out. To be a party that says, let's keep homosexuals and single moms and atheists from adopting. Let's
right.
not let them be parents.
Right.
To, you know, go to these rallies. Well, this rally itself where Lederman was speaking. Guy named David Horowitz, an author who has turned from, he was a liberal, now he's an arch-conservative who preaches that Muslims are out to get us.
Right.
Part of this whole trend of fear-mongering
right.
about immigrants and Muslims in particular. You don't get to say, keep out Mexicans, keep out Muslims, keep out immigrants, keep out homosexuals. You don't get to say, keep out.
Right.
And in addition to that, propose a budget that would gut, you know, health services, science research, Planned Parenthood,
the arts.
You don't get to propose budget cuts that would slash all these community building efforts and then tell me that you are the party of inclusiveness
right.
and community. Or at least you don't get to tell millennials that. Because I know a lot of people say, you know, there's a lot of stuff about sociological observations on millennials. I don't think millennials are stupid.
No, they're not. They're just young.
They're just young.
They're just another generation of young people who are trying to figure out what's BS and what's not BS and how to like navigate their way through the current landscape of the world we live in.
And I think they'll hear this newspeak from the South Dakota Republican Party chairman about, hey, Republicans believe in community and inclusiveness. Join us. They'll look at the real record of South Dakota Republicans and go, no, Dan, we aren't believing that.
This rolls over into our in-depth topic. We have been living in a surreal reality since the election last November, and it's something I never would have thought would happen. It's something that I never, like, Idiocracy proposed kind of a similar situation. You're like, that's hilarious, an exaggeration, something ridiculous that I will never actually wake up in my real life and have to experience. But now we just passed kind of an arbitrary marker, but a marker nonetheless. We've been living in Trumpsylvania for the last 100 days, and I know we usually focus on local issues, but I just kind of want to take a moment and reflect on how this is impacting various facets of our lives. So with that, let's pick apart the first 100 days a little bit, if you don't mind.
I don't mind at all. I'm still trying to figure out what the president thinks of the first 100 days. He's said both that the 100 days is a big deal. He put out a 2020 campaign ad, for Pete's sake, already in certain markets, saying that President Trump has achieved more in his first 100 days than any other president. It's amazing how great. I mean, this all this, the superlatives we're used to. He's done that, and at the same time, he and his people have been saying, the 100 days is arbitrary. It doesn't matter, blah, blah, blah. So I can't figure out from our president whether we're supposed to treat this landmark date as a landmark or not. But we're going to go for it.
Well, that's a perfect way to set this up, because emotionally, as a human being, and we don't do a lot of emotional talk here. It's not a really feely show. It's a facty show, but it's so mood swingy anymore. You know, you'll see he proposes the budget. We're going to cut out the money for the arts. We're going to cut out the money for healthcare. We're going to do this. And internally, I get really angry and wound up. But we keep going through this process where when the rubber hits the road, they go, we can't actually do that.
And that's
we don't have the votes, we don't have the know-how, this is poorly constructed legislature. His budget, like his tax plan, was one page. That's not gonna happen. So how angry, like I'm learning, like I don't really need to go in on these. You know, it's not worth the emotional wear and tear. But I worry if you stop paying attention, then they are going to start doing ridiculous stuff because they wore us down.
Yeah, I think that's a really good encapsulation of kind of the emotional landscape for activists, mm-hmm. for people who pay attention to this. Because you're right, I had that same feeling. When this started, I thought we're going to have 4 years or a year and a half until impeachment happens.
Right.
Of just being beaten down emotionally and politically, of seeing awful things happen. And we have seen some awful things happen. You know,
true,
we've seen good people driven out of office. We've mm-hmm. seen the purge of the U.S. attorneys. Mm-hmm. We've seen, you know, executive orders reversing or at least calling for the reversal of good environmental protections. We've got a president who's looking at offshore drilling. He approved Keystone XL, Dakota Access. You know, you can see all sorts of defeats mm-hmm. that have kind of been done by fiat. And the Affordable Health Care Act, Obamacare, that was another great example. Trump got in and we all thought, Congress is Republican, the president is Republican, we're going to lose it.
Right.
Oh my gosh, where are we going to get our insurance?
Right.
You know, and as someone personally who's spent a lot of his life on individual plans instead of employer plans,
right.
You know, right now we're lucky where we have an employer who covers us and that's great. But having spent much of my life and my family's life fighting mm-hmm. for coverage on the individual market,
right.
that scared me to death.
Right.
You know, and we've got there are pre-existing conditions around. I've been pretty healthy in my life, but I know that under the old system, I was one chronic illness away from never being able to afford insurance.
Right.
Period. That was honestly scary.
Well, and from bankruptcy, for heaven's sakes.
Right. And that's what the Trump administration and the Republican Congress promised they'd do, is get rid of Obamacare. And so, yeah, emotionally, I was deeply concerned about the millions of Americans and possibly myself who would lose coverage under this plan. But then when they try to actually do it, they fail.
Right.
And I remember that day was an emotional high. And I
right.
was seeing people
right.
around me going, yeah, Congress failed. We win. We keep Obamacare. It really has been an emotional situation because so much is at stake.
Well, and another thing, just looking at people, looking out at the world prior to this election, I just thought we were smarter. I'm sorry if that's condescending. I'm sorry if that's mean. I just can't believe that half of our country, less than half of our country, I mean, I don't know what the actual, like 24%, I think, is what voted for Trump. That might not be completely accurate, but about 24% of people were capable of looking at him and going, that's the way we're going to do it. And I feel like it's like if you believe that your family were doctors and you'd been raised by doctors and you've been told your whole life you come from these smart people who make great decisions and are very intelligent, and then you do your ancestry.com and you're like, oh, they were all carnies. What happened? I was so wrong about us. This changes my worldview, and it makes it really, you know, I just don't know what to feel about people now, and it does make me realize we need to go back to talking to each other in person,
right.
and stop yelling at each other over the internet. But I really want to sit down. I don't understand what you saw in him that makes you think he should be driving this bus.
Right. And again, we invite our listeners to submit your comments on the blog. We want to hear from you about what you think. What do you think now?
What do you think after 100 days?
And I would tell people, though, and I will fight for this position hard. We haven't seen anything in the last 100 days that suggests that Donald Trump was just putting on an act and that he really is a brilliant leader.
Yeah.
And as a matter of fact, every day it seems he has made tweets or statements or gaffes or policy failures or whatever that only affirm the notion that not only does he not know what he's doing, but he has no interest in getting better at what he's doing. And that's the alarming thing. Because I understand everybody who has won the presidency was not president before.
Right.
All 45 presidents has come in as rookies. There's no job like president that one does that is the presidency.
But there are things you can do that will prepare you for it. And and you can have a depth of knowledge. I mean, he clearly, if you hear him talk about history, he doesn't know anything about history.
Right.
He doesn't know anything.
This week he's telling us that Andrew Jackson could have stopped the Civil War and that the Civil War wasn't really about slavery.
Civil War about? Nobody even asks.
I have sixth graders.
What are you talking about?
I have sixth graders who asked that question, what was the Civil War about? They could give you a more intelligent answer than what Donald Trump sort of burbled this week.
Yeah.
We have yet to hear any thoughtful, deliberate, extended explanation of policy from the President of the United States this year. It is clear to me, you know, say if someone who says Donald Trump is dumb or Donald Trump is not good at his job, that's not a political statement. That is an objective assessment of job performance.
Mm-hmm.
And that does make it hard, like you say, to think that an electoral majority, and again, a majority of Americans agree with us that Donald Trump is not qualified to be president. They voted for someone else. But he got just enough Americans to vote for him in just the right places that he could win under our system. So I won't go as far to say American voters are dumb. I will say the electoral college system is dumb because it lets someone unqualified for the job like Donald Trump get it.
Well, and that perfectly rolls over into our next topic, which is we only know what we see through the media. And there are different ways to slice that up. Some people are more active about it than others. Some people try and pursue better media than others. But I feel like the media has really shifted over this process. Once again, your actions have repercussions. And I think the media looked at the election of Donald Trump and went, I didn't think he was going to win either. But as you recall, you know, CNN, a lot of media outlets, you know, he would give a crazy speech. It was funny and weird and a train wreck. And they'd turn on the camera and leave it pointed there for hours on end and giving him just hours and hours of free access to the brains of the American people.
But I wonder, Spencer, is the media doing the same thing now?
I don't think so. I think the media is asking, my observation has been that they are asking tougher questions. They are asking follow-up questions. I don't know if this will last. But they are certainly, you know, there was just the interview last weekend that we were talking about before the show where
the Face the Nation interview.
It was on Face the Nation. Okay. And he said, well, I want you to explain what happened with the Obama wiretapping thing that
you
put out there.
John Dickerson.
They're not just letting things go out and, you know, they fact check him. They call him out. I don't think they call him out nearly as much as they should, but they're certainly doing it more than they used to. I mean, he had a lot of things that were just allowed to float by and people. I assume it's because of ratings. I assume it's because they want them to keep. They want to keep riding this as long as they can. But I don't think they thought it was going to come to fruition.
Mm-hmm.
I think they put more. You know, they must have given more credit to the voters than they didn't understand the repercussions of their actions and how it impacted people's views.
But in that Face the Nation interview you were talking about, it was interesting because John Dickerson did pose the question,
right?
And I mean, Trump kind of brought it up about the surveillance.
Right.
And Dickerson said, well, tell us about that surveillance. Do you stick by that? What do you mean?
I don't stick by anything.
The president then doesn't answer.
Right.
He says, I don't stick by anything. And he had this line. He's like, well, I'll leave it to you to decide it. And it was kind of, it boiled down to this weird, I call it a relativistic answer, where he says, I'm not going to explain it. You can interpret it whatever way you want. I'm entitled to my opinion. And the reporter was like, no, we want you to say what it means.
Yeah, and this isn't an opinion thing. Mm-hmm. An opinion is cake tastes good, cake tastes bad.
Right.
But if there's a cake on the table, there's a cake on the table.
And Donald Trump is saying, why don't I put a cake under my phone?
Yeah, there's a wiretap here. Mm-hmm. And so you need to now explain why you think that, or what led you to that statement.
And there, Trump exposes something really interesting that we see not just from him, but I think from a lot of the people who voted for him, and sure, some people on the liberal side too, where we think we can say things online about, you know, Trump is evil, Hillary's evil, take your pick, whatever, and then just throw it up there. And then when people argue with us, and I hear people do this online, just like Trump, they say, well, you can have your interpretation.
Right,
we're all
right.
entitled to our opinion. But like you said, no, our public statements, and most of all, the president's public statements,
right.
are not simple, off-the-cuff expressions of opinion that have no consequence.
Right. Evil, well, and evil is subjective. However, there is a tap on my phone is not subjective.
Right, exactly. When we're asking Donald Trump, when John Dickerson was asking Donald Trump about the wiretap, he wasn't saying to Donald Trump, do you think this wiretap is justification for voting against Democrats,
right.
or some sort of, you know, opinion or value judgment.
Do you think it's fair that the Obama administration tapped your phone? That's not the question.
Yeah,
the question was, prove that the Obama administration tapped your phone.
Right. And the thing is, the surveillance point, I can see where it could be interesting. If Donald Trump were using that surveillance point to say, this surveillance on my phones when I was a candidate is just one example of broader surveillance that the government is conducting on citizens across the country without warrants, that would be an interesting policy thing to talk about. Though even there, we need the proof that that surveillance
Well, what
is
happened is
happening.
This, as you will recall, this came up because his staff and his people were talking to the Russian ambassador and to people from countries that we don't have good relationships
right.
with. And the NSA does tap the phones when you are talking to foreign entities of that nature, because that's how we protect ourselves from, you know, from spying and from all kinds of mischief.
Right.
Basically, if you're running for president and you're having phone calls with a foreign entity who does not wish us well, we should be tapping your phone. He didn't just tap Donald Trump's phone. Donald Trump, you know, made the phone call that gets your phone tapped.
Sure. Now even there, I could see an argument, and I might even make the argument that, you know, if I'm a U.S. citizen, I have a right to communicate with whoever I want, and the government shouldn't be tapping that unless there's a warrant or cause for suspicion.
Right, but there was a warrant.
And there you go.
There's FISA. There's a whole this is all established law. This has been hashed out long
sure.
before we got here.
And all of which is, you know, that's fascinating policy stuff, and that's what we should be talking
sure.
about. Is this a proper use of the government's power?
And I think there's a very valid question as to why were you talking to these people? And why did you lie about talking to these people? And when we asked you if you talked about these people under oath, why did you say that you didn't?
Right. But we can't even get there yet because Donald Trump makes a claim and hasn't
right.
even affirmatively established that it's true. Mm. And that's been the nature of the whole 100 days. Donald Trump hasn't grown into his role. He's remained the same petty, greedy, selfish,
right.
and insincere charlatan
right.
that he was on the campaign trail, who thinks he can say whatever he wants and let those words constitute their own reality.
Well, you know, and I just heard it this morning, and I wish I don't remember which show I was listening to, but another thing that the media has started doing, which I think is very savvy of them, is at least some outlets are saying we just stopped chasing the tweets, we stopped chasing the absurd comments, and we're trying to just look at the actions.
Yep.
You know, although inviting a foreign dictator who has death squads to the White House,
the Philippine president.
Yes, that's
oh
an action.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So that's certainly worth covering, and that's crazy. But Donald Trump just tweeting out some BS about who even knows.
See, and that's. You made me think of that when you were talking about sort of the media's role in giving Donald Trump lots of free press coverage during the campaign mm-hmm. and how that sort of led to his presidency or contributed to it. I can see the merits of the media saying, we're not going to chase the tweets. We're just going to focus on actual policy decisions. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But I can also see the argument that when the president of the United States opens his mouth, whether on mic or on
sure.
Twitter or whatever, those words matter.
Well,
that yours and mine don't when we hit Twitter.
But I think this is a reaction to the fact that we spent several news cycles chasing down these
mm-hmm.
crazy
mm-hmm.
things that he farts out of his head, And other things were happening while we were following those. So I just right, think they're figuring right. out how to put things in perspective. And we can all go look at his Twitter feed ourselves. I mean, that's yep. the whole reason he likes Twitter, is that you are now able to go and see what he's saying. And but they don't make it the you know 24, 48 hours of just talking about something our crazy ass president tweeted.
And that's definitely a problem I think we can see in the 100 days, is that the tweets and other Trump antics
right.
did dominate the news cycle. We look back at the last 100 days. What did Congress do? Well, we know there was the health care bill. Almost nothing else rose to the fore.
Yeah.
It's constant Trump coverage. And even, like, I think personally, I think a lot of people are like me. They look at their news feed, and the first thing they think is, what did Trump wreck today?
Yeah.
And that you're right. That does crowd out other things that we should be paying attention to at the national and the state level.
And I do remember feeling weird the first day I woke up, and Trump wasn't the top headline.
Right.
I'm like,
right.
I don't know how to process this.
Well, let's hope the media helps us process that by keeping their eyes on other stories.
I think they've learned a lot over the last couple hundred days, and I hope they continue to go in the directions they've been going. I'll definitely give them credit for that. It's a really interesting time. Let's talk about how the DNC's handling things, in your opinion.
Right, the Democrats.
And what they should do and what they've been doing.
Well, the big debate, and we've discussed this off air as well, and a lot of people have, the big contest within the Democratic ranks is, how do we respond to this?
Mm.
Do we wage all-out war, or do we try to compromise? And in that regard, you know, at the congressional level, I think this week's budget deal to carry the budget out through the rest of this fiscal year to the end of September shows that, you know, compromise with Donald Trump isn't the issue we have to worry about. Just holding our ground in Congress can actually get us somewhere, because we just passed it's not a continuing budget resolution. It finishes out this budget year, where basically Democrats got everything they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
They went to the Republican leadership and said, guys, the cuts you want to do, we won't vote for them. And you're going to lose moderate Republicans as well. Your budget won't pass.
Right.
We'll give you Democratic votes if you fund Planned Parenthood, you fund the arts, you don't fund the border wall, boom, boom, boom. Democrats had every reason to celebrate this week, because they found if they stick to their guns, the Republicans in Congress don't have the strength to make stuff happen.
Mm-hmm.
And they aren't getting any help from Donald Trump, who comes in and says a few words and then gets bored.
Right.
So at the national level, I would suggest that, you know, in practical policymaking for this Congress, Democrats they're on the right ground. They've got good ground to dig in their heels, stand for what's right, resist the Republicans, and keep things the way they are with Obamacare and other issues.
Do you have a postmortem for the election? What do you think they did right? What do you think they did wrong?
You know, part of me has tried not to postmortem it, because even, you know, Hillary Clinton was on the news yesterday talking about how, well, when Comey came out and WikiLeaks, that caused people who were on the fence to, they were thinking about me, but then they changed their minds.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of like, yeah, great, sit down, Hillary, you had your chance, you lost it.
I feel like it. Hillary, thank you for your service. Thank you for everything you've done for this country.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Step aside.
Yep.
You're done. Please do not run again. We don't, and I'm not even a big fan of Chelsea. I don't think she needs to be showing up. I do feel like, as has been said a million times, you know, I'm a fan of the Howard Dean 50 state plan.
Yes,
I think it was ridiculous not to do it. I think because we didn't do it, we are now living through the Trump era.
Mm-hmm.
I think they really do. You know, obviously, if you look at the numbers, there's a lot of white working class people that are still in with the DNC, but I do think they need to double down and figure out how to get people talking to each other again, and how to heal some clash divisions, instead of how do we get people on the same page? How do we get people to feel like South Dakotans rather than whatever your blank hyphen South Dakotan is?
Yeah, I think my favorite part when I do post-mortem on the election, and not just this election but the last 10 years, I do go a lot back to Howard Dean's 50-state strategy and the failure of Obama and Clinton to adopt that strategy.
Yeah.
Because the failure to do that, the focus on just getting Obama elected and holding the White House, and then Hillary's focus on just getting her elected and not doing a lot of coattailing, and some candidates shying away from her, that's what led to the 2010 Republican takeover of legislatures that we talked about at the top. And we see abortion restrictions go up in Texas and other states, and women's health go down. a lot happens outside of the White House. A lot happens outside of Congress. And building the brand for your party happens at the state and local level.
Right.
So in terms of less the post-mortem and the pre-election fix, how do we make stuff happen, is yes, we invest resources everywhere selling the Democratic brand. And we're even seeing this in Montana. Mm-hmm. They're having a special election up there because Zinke, the Montana congressman that got appointed to head the Secretary of Interior, is the position he got in charge of the parks and all that. Good grief. The Democrat who's running up there is running on Obamacare. He's saying, Obamacare's great, send me to Congress so we can protect it.
Right.
There are Democrats around here in South Dakota and in Montana who kind of shied away from Obama and the brand and the Democratic brand. And
always the problem.
That's the problem. If you shy away from our brand and just try to portray yourself as Republican light, it's like Bud and Bud Light. Not that either is that great, but if you got a choice, you're going to have Bud. If you have a choice, you're going to have real Republicans.
Yeah, they're blue dogs. And they always drive me nuts. And it's a rural phenomenon, and I feel like it's just a lack of communication on the Democrats' part. I feel like they give up things that will benefit rural people because they're not willing to discuss things with them, and maybe that's why they won. But moving forward for both parties, and we're going to start talking about the RNC now, mm-hmm. there's major changes happening at Fox News now, and that is going to impact the Republican Party in ways that probably even more so than Donald Trump's craziness is going to impact the Republican Party, because the looking glass that people were gazing through to watch all of this stuff is now, there's going to be a different filter on it. They're not going to be the same place.
It will change the dynamic. My concern, just thinking about this, the less Fox News we have, the better. Please do bring it on. Let that change keep rolling. My concern would be, and I don't know what Fox News will change into, if it changes at all, because of these shakeups. You know, it's not like they're going to hire Al Franken to run the network after this. They're still going to get some other Yahoo. My worry would be they'll get some Breitbart Yahoo.
Well, but the multiple levels are changing. So yes. Roger Ailes is gone. Bill O'Reilly is gone. A lot of the old school guys are gone. I think that there's not going to be the money. The Breitbart people are, as they keep exposing themselves, like Milo, what's his name? You know, like he went out into the fresh air and he got his legs chopped out from underneath him.
Yep.
And I think from a financial perspective, we're going to reject these crazies that are having a moment in the sun. The sun is going to burn their skin off, you know? And if you want to keep your thing afloat, if you want to keep Fox News afloat, you don't want that many Nazis, you know, attached to you like barnacles. I know they've been consciously trying to move towards the center, and I believe new management gives them an opportunity. And I've read as much too.
Oh, okay.
The weird thing is that MSNBC wants to move to the right, but could you have worse timing? You've got the number one show right now with Rachel Maddow. Mm-hmm. Like, people are flocking to it.
Yeah.
I don't know what the numbers are right on right wing radio at the moment, but again, if O'Reilly's gone, I mean, Sean Hannity, they're also starting to, you know, things are starting to turn up for Sean Hannity. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know how that's going to affect him on like Sirius XM or anything like that. But as these guys start to fall, and as the generation that, you know, the baby boomers are starting to pass away, and that mm-hmm. is the bulk of their viewership, it's just going to be a different landscape.
Yeah. Millennials, we're counting on you.
Yeah.
And that would, because there are young people, and I see even in South Dakota here, there are, you know, the teen Republicans and college Republicans, there are groups for them too, and plenty who buy in, mm-hmm. and they may have more than the college Democrats and the high school Democrats. That generation change may play a big part of it. But the baby boomers, mm-hmm. you know, and even the age 50 set in that, they aren't going to go away immediately.
Right.
And so in the interim, even as Fox News sort of, you know, crumbles, reorganizes, whatever, there are still going to be a lot of Breitbarts and other right-wing watch places that will take up the slack, and that are in a position, at least right now under Trump, to take up that slack even more.
But
they're affirmed from the White House.
But I feel like selling this message, there's a level of savvy to it, mm-hmm. and there's a level mm-hmm. of savvy that Bill O'Reilly had and that Roger Ailes had, where, you know, you got to dog whistle it a little bit. Although, I mean, I don't know, man. Trump certainly didn't dog whistle anything. Trump just put everything out there on the table.
Right.
And people went, yep, that's, you know, like it's been remarked upon a million times. There was this underbelly of racism that we didn't realize was there mm-hmm. that has now come to the surface. I just feel like the backlash, if it's too, exposed. Like, I don't think it will last long. Do you know what I'm saying?
I do, and I think we... That might bring us back to having faith in the goodness of humanity.
Right.
And I'm thinking about what you said at the top. You know, you're concerned that, boy, if people will actually elect Donald Trump, what's wrong with the electorate? I understand that fear because it kind of shakes my faith in democracy as well. But that's amidst all the emotional roller coaster, the 100 days and this and that, I think that's the way we have to move forward, but, is to have faith that if we expose racism and homophobia and all the Islamophobia and all the bad stuff, people of good conscience will realize, wait, they're actually serious about being Nazis. Well, we need to fight them.
Right. And that's the thing, too. I honestly think a lot of people that voted for Donald Trump did it on a goof. And now they don't want to admit they did it on a goof, but there was a goof. It's, come on, he's not going to win. It's crazy. He's hilarious. So hopefully it's been a wake-up call for everybody. And I, you know, we're running out of time here real quick, but let's just talk about two really quick things. We won't go into it too deeply, but how do you feel the Trump presidency is affecting the world, our standing in the world, the world's view of us?
If I were Vladimir Putin or Kim Jong-il or even Angela Merkel, if I were anybody, friend or rival on the world scene, I would view this as an excellent opportunity to boost my country's position of leadership in the world, because I could say to all of my compatriots, friend or foe, look, you can't trust the Americans. They don't know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. They have no coherent policy. Mm-hmm. Their foreign policy is going to be dictated entirely by the generals. Maybe they'll keep things on an even keel, but they can't act without the president. So the United States is not a leader anymore.
Right.
I'm your leader. Putin can say that. Merkel can say that. British Prime Minister. This is a great chance for other countries to pick up their stature.
Yeah. We're not. I agree completely. So let's just move forward. The last thing, I'm really impressed with the way people have turned up and turned out and showed up and protested and made signs and called people. And you can really see the impact of it. And I think that's part of the reason that the RNC is having trouble pushing through its legislation, is because they woke up the beast. And they're not accustomed to people showing up at their offices and saying, if you do that, it'll kill my kids.
You bet. And that's why the Affordable Care Act didn't get repealed.
Right.
That's why healthcare repeal failed, because people were flooding the phones, flooding the town halls, and making it clear that if Republicans, if you vote for this, you will not win next year, period. Right. And it's as simple as that. Thing is now, we've won for 100 days.
Right.
We have several hundred more days to go. And so people, you alluded to this earlier, we have to sustain this effort.
Yeah.
And it brings us back to the idea that, you know, democracy isn't easy. We don't just elect a president and everything's fine.
Right.
And when we elect an idiot as president, we don't just whack him in the nose once and then everything's fine.
Right.
Donald Trump is going to stay stupid for 4 years or another year until impeachment, whichever comes first.
Right, right.
During that time, the only way to stop his agenda is the only way to stop the most powerful man in the world.
Right.
Like, it's not a fantasy. The most powerful man in the world is doing stupid and dangerous things. We must remain constantly engaged, constantly calling Congress for the rest of Donald Trump's term to keep that damage from happening.
Yeah.
Because it's our democracy, not his.
Right.
And when it's our democracy, that's our work. It's work, work, work.
Yeah. And once again, I think we're doing a good job so far, and I'm impressed. I'm impressed with the American people, and I do think we've got the energy to keep going. I think everybody needs to, you know, unplug from time to time, take a deep breath, maybe do a little meditation, maybe eat a piece of fruit, and just. But also, like, look at what we have done. So don't give up hope, because a lot of good things are happening. A lot of progress is being made, and we are doing it. So hang in there.
You bet. Keep going, America.
Here's one thing you can do if you want to get involved. You can run for the school board. That's something local. That's right here in your community that you could do that. And somebody is doing it. His name's Brian Sharp.
Yes.
Let's see what he's all about.
Thanks for speaking with us. Brian, introduce yourself quick to the voters.
Well, I'm Brian Sharp. I'm a fourth generation on this farm here. I farm along with my wife and my brother and his wife and my dad and mom. So
here, just east of Aberdeen, right?
Just east of Aberdeen, yep.
You serve on the school board right now, correct?
I do, yep.
Tell us, how long have you been on the school board?
Been on the school board for 12 years. So
12 years, is that four terms?
Yes, four terms, so okay. of 3 years each. I got on when my oldest went into school. He's now a senior, so
graduating this year.
He is. Yep. My wife and I felt we needed to be involved in our kids' education, and this was one way I was fortunate enough to be involved.
12 years, that's a lot of service. I hate to have you boil it down to, you know, just one or two comments, but tell us, in that time, you look back at 12 years on the school board, what do you think are the most important things that you have been able to achieve working with various board members for the school district?
Well, I think I'd like to think that I'm a fair and objective school board member that takes a look at our students, our taxpayers, and our employees, and kind of has a happy balance between all of those. But most importantly, keeping in mind that our kids are our most important commodity, that that's what we're here to teach, and that's what I think is most important in the school.
So over those 12 years, there's certainly been a lot of different things that have happened to Aberdeen, to the state. Can you identify maybe one or two really big changes that have happened that you as a school board member have had to help the district through?
I guess the increasing class size that we've been very fortunate to have, you know, a lot of South Dakota has been seeing decreased size of classes as we've moved out of the rural America. So Aberdeen has been very fortunate to been seeing an increase, and we've had to all of our elementary schools are now three section schools, you know, so we've added on to all the elementaries till they were all full, and just this last year our elementaries were at over capacity, so we decided to open Mike Miller Elementary, and that we were able to reuse a building. It was not being used in the Aberdeen area.
The insurance building, yep, the Coventry insurance building.
Coventry, Mutual of Omaha, however you remember it. But so we've been able to utilize that for less money than building on a brand new site and being able to reduce those class sizes to where we think it's very manageable now for the students and for the teachers. And even the parents have said it's really nice to see that our class sizes are going down. That, of course, comes at a cost. You're hiring more teachers, but we've been fortunate that we've been able to have that increased enrollment and have those more kids coming into our district.
Sure. So you're getting good feedback from the parents, not just parents at Mike Miller, but I guess district-wide, the elementaries are enjoying those smaller class sizes.
Yeah, we were able to take pressure off of the other districts or the other schools within the district and get those down to very manageable levels that they fall in line with our class size policy. You know, our administration really thought things through, and one thing we really worked hard on was to get all the drop off of the street. So
when parents bring kids in and pick them up,
come in and drop them off, all of that is off street traffic. So that's nice to see that none of the kids are running across the street to get to the cars and all that sort of thing.
So traffic's worked, buildings worked, good experience for the people over on that side of town.
Yep.
Another thing that's happened in your tenure would have been, well, I guess this school year happened last year with the legislature and the Blue Ribbon K-12 panel on teacher compensation. How has that increase affected what you see happening in the district and decisions that you on the board had to make?
Well, the majority of that went towards more teacher pay. I mean, and that was the whole intent of that. We could pay our teachers a little bit more of a living wage, so that got bumped up, and 85% of what came in from that extra sales tax had to go to teacher salaries. So we were kind of, our hands were a little bit tied that we couldn't use that for anything else.
Right.
That's where that happened.
And that didn't go pay for the new elementary or anything
that.
Nope. That went to teacher pay and the benefits and such.
Right. And we've seen a few more applicants for teacher positions. I mean, that's always a positive. That's going to take a few years to roll down because you don't just all of a sudden have elementary ed teachers or middle school ed teachers come out of the college immediately when they see that the teacher pay will be up a little bit higher. They've got to go into college and have that 4 or 5 years of education before they'll come out as
the ones
as teachers.
In there now, they've already gone into food service or nursing saying teaching's not good. They can't turn on a dime.
Right.
Looking then at, again, you've served for 12 years, and not to discourage you, but holy cow, Brian, you've been on school board for 12 years. Why would anybody want to do it for another 3 years? You got corn to plant, don't you?
True. I do. I really enjoy it. I enjoy working with the kids and working with the teachers and administrators. And I always told my wife, if it gets to the point where it seems like I'm not enjoying it, let me know, and I'll maybe recognize it, and then maybe that's the time that I shouldn't be on the school board anymore. But it's been enjoyable. You're
still enjoying it. That time to quit is not there yet.
Right.
You still feel you can serve the community in this position.
I do. As the only ag land owner operator on the board, I think it's important to have somebody that represents the ag land taxpayer on that board.
Really? There are no other farmers or ranchers on the board right now.
Nope. So somebody may own land that I don't know about, you know.
Sure.
As far as operating on an existing farm, I'd be the only one.
Your everyday job. Well, yep. That's interesting. I mean, yeah, because you're serving in, I guess, what in South Dakota counts as an urban school district. As the only full-time ag operator producer on the board, what different perspective do you think you bring that the board wouldn't get otherwise?
Well, I like to think I bring that taxpayer on that ag side to that board, to the decisions, you know, some of the financial decisions. Everybody, of course, pays taxes.
Right,
but
right.
The ag side has a pretty heavy burden on the property tax.
Not everybody has the amount of property and deals with the ag assessment the way you do.
Right.
You've even got
right.
a different formula for how your taxes are calculated on land, correct?
Yes. Yep. Yep.
So that taxpayer perspective, that's the big deal there.
Well, part of it, yes. This, I guess, just going in a little bit different way here.
Sure.
We just opened the ATAC Academy at the high school last year. This next fall, we're going to offer ag classes.
We haven't offered that yet.
At ATAC, no.
Really?
We have not. So that'll be a first time going into our school district and eventually, hopefully, having an FFA chapter. And that, so moving in those areas, that's exciting for the ag community. You know, of course, FFA is not strictly ag, but it the majority of the contests and involves somewhat in the ag, somewhere in that ag industry.
Sure. Have you heard, is there a lot of demand, interest from parents, students for the ag vocational program?
They signed up for classes here a month and a half, or had a survey, and there was over 300 kids that were interested in that. 300 spots. It might have been multiple kids for two different classes, but
sure.
300 spots were wanting to be in these four classes that we're going to be teaching.
Looking ahead then at three more years on the school board, if you're one of the, we've got five candidates,
mm-hmm.
three seats are available. If you get that 60% thumbs up to do this for another 3 years, what do you see coming up in the next 3 years that needs to get done that you want to be there to do?
I don't see anything broken right now. I mean, that's we're moving along rather well. I mean, we're the budget wise, we're sitting okay as long as our class sizes, as our student numbers stay there. You know, if those start to dwindle, which we don't see them in our forecasts, but that of course could be a concern. Moving forward in the technology realm, I mean, there's always technology that needs to be. New technology every day, and the school district wants to be involved in technology, get these kids involved in technology, but we can't always have the newest every single year because we are a school district that can't afford to buy everything every year. So we're really trying to be everything for all those technology realms that they can go out and learn about and get their hands on. We actually, at Mike Miller this year, we have an iPad initiative. We're piloting that at the Mike Miller Elementary School. If that works out, that may be something we move out to the rest of the elementary schools in this next year. So
sure, sure. And look, now you've served on the board for four terms, you said. A couple of the people running haven't been on the board before. You know, you may have same people in, but you'll have at least one new person on the board.
Correct, yep.
If you have the chance to talk to a new person coming onto the school board, what do you think is the most important mindset for that person to approach school board service with?
When I came on the board, I was the younger one. I think everybody else had at least 9 years when I came on.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that they told me was, it's going to take 2 to 3 years before you figure this out.
Like a whole first term, really.
Because there's so many checkbooks that the district deals with. You know, they've got capital outlay, you've got general fund, you've got food service, and I think four or five more. and the money from those can't transfer, for the most part, can't transfer back and forth. So I can't take general fund money and build a parking lot. You know, so just that whole mindset of that, of how school districts work and how the school system is budgeted and works out, that's something that kind of takes a learning curve. And the fact that the board is really only a policy making board. That's all we're tasked is doing, is mm-hmm. is making policy and tasking the superintendent to implement that policy. You know, we don't get involved in the minutia of this coach, that coach. That's not our job. Our
right.
job is to task the superintendent to implement the only reason.
Sure. We do write a lot and talk a lot about the legislature mm-hmm. on Dakota Free Press. So I'm just curious, if you're on the board, you know, obviously a lot of what happens in the school districts is affected by state funding, mm-hmm. state statutes, you know, decisions made yep. in peer. If you're on the board and you get sent to a visit with our legislators, what are one or two things that you would say to the legislature, please do this for us or change this?
Well, I think this last year or 2 years ago, they did quite a bit to help us out, to increase that sales tax, to help the school districts out. This last year, it was only a 0.3% increase, which is kind of rough. You know, you're trying to pay all the increased inflationary costs, all the raises you could potentially give. Mm-hmm. All that has to come mm-hmm. out of that 0.3%.
Yeah.
So I guess that would be what I would take home to them, would be that you know, look at you know, we're educating the majority of the kids in the state here, and that's pretty important.
Beyond the money, I'm curious, is there any other non-budget issue that the legislature could tackle, the governor could tackle, that would help the Aberdeen School District and other school districts do better?
No, because I like to keep it down at local control.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I
mm-hmm.
want the local school districts to be able to run their school district the way it works the best for their area, for their town, for their district. Our district is considerably different than Redfield or Lemon or whoever. You know, we all have our different challenges. We all have our different budgetary needs. We all have our different set of students. And so the local school board is what kind of sees that every day and day in and day out.
Brian, you're running for school board. Tell us, if voters want to get a hold of you, talk to you about school policy, find out about what you want to do in the next 3 years, how can they get a hold of you?
The easiest way would be email through the Aberdeen School District website, brian.sharp@k12.sd.us. So
sure.
Just right on the school board page on the Aberdeen K-12 website, there's my picture, and there's a link there to email me, and I will respond.
Sounds good. Brian, one last question. Are we going to get out in the field and plant this week?
I sure hope so.
I hope so, too. I want to eat. Brian Sharp, incumbent candidate for Aberdeen Central School Board. Thank you so much for talking with Dakota Free Press.
Thank you, Corey.
All right. Thank you, Brian. And it was nice to meet your meat goats.
Yes, maybe we'll get to eat those goats later on. We'll have to see how much a side of goat costs.
I hope so. He doesn't make goat cheese. I asked. Goat cheese is great. They should do that. So let's say you want to hang out with some progressives. And I haven't been there the last couple weeks, and I apologize, but I'm going to be there this week. You can go to the Progressive Happy Hour, yeah?
Yes, at the Ward Plaza and Bar here in downtown Aberdeen. 5 o'clock every Friday. Democrats, progressives, liberals, and just curious people. We get together, talk politics, see how things are going, keep each other healthy.
Have a couple cocktails. What's it going to hurt?
I
wouldn't, because I don't drink, and neither do you. But you can. It's fine. We're not going to judge you.
They have great cherry Coke.
They do. The bartenders are also really nice. They have a really nice staff. And you can eat it. I'm not giving free advertising to Roma, but if you like pasta. They do a fine job. Okay, please, once again, if you enjoy this podcast or if you enjoy hating this podcast, please throw a couple of bucks in the tip jar right on the sidebar of the webpage, or if you go down to the comment section, there's the tip jar there. So having said that, I think we got it in the can.
If you have any questions about the blog, about the podcast, suggestions for guests, if you'd like to be a guest on our program, if you've got something to say, just give me a shout at Corey, C-O-R-Y, at DakotaFreePress.com.
And if you want to do a theme song for us, we are more than open to, if you want to submit some music to us, that would be great. And again, yeah, questions, comments, whatever you got, send it to Corey. And okay, I'm Spencer Dobson.
And I'm Corey Heidelberger. Thanks for listening to Dakota Free Press.
We'll see you next time.